produced by Jeffrey Cresselius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier and Wayne Hall. This is Yes Music Podcast episode 399. What did they do next? Part 6A, John Anderson.
This is Bill Bruford, the ever-enthusiastic young drummer from the group Yes, and you're listening to the Yes Music Podcast.
Welcome to episode 399 of the Yes Music Podcast, two fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine, and co-host, Mark Anthony Kay, will be along a little bit later on. Do get involved yourself with the podcast, which you can do via the various different ways on the site, yesmusicpodcast.com. This week, Mark and I discuss the next musician to leave the band, John Anderson, and what he did next. In the first part of our feature, we talk a little about the reasons for John leaving in 1980 and the first solo record he released after leaving, Song of Seven. We will return to a more in-depth look at the album itself in a couple of weeks' time. We're gearing up for next week's 400th episode of the show, which will feature a great interview with someone you'll recognise, as well as an epic competition to win lots of Yes and Yes-related items. You'll need to have your Yes thinking caps on to stand a chance of winning something. So lots more on that next week. Around the social webs this week, and specifically Facebook, Mark shared his latest Project Gemini update, and Uncle Preston Frazier has reached face-to-face from the ladder, which he's rather positive about. There was a huge amount of interest in a post Mark added about the 41st birthday of Tomato, which I was obviously delighted to see. There have been 49 comments, 6 shares, and over 1,000 people have viewed it. Some of the comments weren't negative. Actually, the vast majority were positive, at least about some of the album. I celebrated by adding more cassette tapes of Tomato to my collection. Look out for those on Instagram, or Insta, to give it its full name if you're a teenager. I linked John Kirkman's 3-volume expanded version of Dialogue, the Yes interviews, which looks fantastic. And in the visitor posts, guess who? Yes, you're right, Jeffrey Mason has kept us right up to date with more Rick Wakeman interviews, news of more Cherry Red, Patrick Mraz re-releases, incidentally I must get hold of that Main Horse album, a 1971 poster, some great photos of the Tomato, and a video of someone who got his hands on a Steve Howe Gibson. Wow. Brian Sullivan added Tempus Fugit by the 2018 School of Rock All-Stars, which, as you'd expect, is fast and frenetic, to say the least. And Doug Curran showed off his signed Tomato disc, as well as his Roger Dean signed copy of The Word is Live. Patron Tony Handley was delighted to receive his prize from the latest Patreon draw. He ended up with a promo CD of The Ladder and the CD single of Saving My Heart. Brady Queen sent a link to the latest Roger Dean Trading Boundaries exhibition in November. I just wish it wasn't so far away from me, but I will have to go one day. Over on Twitter, Dave Kurtzner was in Jeff Downes' kitchen recently, both reminiscing about the times they've appeared on the YMP, obviously, but maybe doing some other things as well. And there were some lovely pieces of feedback on last week's episode from Simon Barrow and Jeffrey Mason, amongst others. Mighty Miguel Falcao pointed us towards some brilliant Yes bass transcriptions from Simon Gilman, and Trevor Horn tweeted a photo of himself in the 80s in his natural habitat, the recording studio. There were more really great comments on the show notes for last week from Jeremy North, Dave Watkinson and John Thompson, so many thanks to those listeners and to everyone who got in touch in any way this week. Just before we continue, please remember you now have only 7 days to send in your audio message to be played on the 400th episode of the Yes Music Podcast. The whole show would have been impossible over the past 8 years if you hadn't listened and got in touch. So please don't miss the opportunity to have your voice on next week's epic and apocalyptic episode. Well, one of the things I've been doing recently is watching Bake Off, the Great British Bake Off. I'm not sure if that means anything to anybody listening around the world, but Mark's here with me now. And it certainly means something to him in Canada. Is that a show you watch, Mark?
I watch it every so often. My mother is religiously addicted to it. They have the UK one that they broadcast, and now there's a Canadian version of it as well.
Wow. Okay, and the reason I I mentioned that. It's not some flippant reason. It's because when we're getting on now to two levers of the band at the same time, that was John Anderson and Rick Wakeman, and we're going to talk about John Anderson and what he did next this week and the next time we come back to this. But this week on the UK version of Bake Off, two Bakers were off the programme at once. So it's just kind of reminded me of that. Anyway, back to Yes. So this all happened. John Anderson and Rick Wakeman both left pretty much as a result of what happened around the Paris sessions, those Paris sessions that Roy Thomas Baker was in charge of. And just to sort of set the scene, I thought I'd just read a couple of things. There's Martin Popoff's book. He talks about this, what happened, and it's got some quotes from some of the main protagonists there. But the first thing he says, which I think is fascinating, is that in 1979, on the 1st of May, John Anderson performs his first solo show, also playing this year in July at the Montreux Jazz Festival. So that's fascinating, isn't it? I mean, maybe Anderson was having itchy feet at the same time as things weren't going brilliantly for Yes. Of course, that's May 79. I mean, that's around the time of the Tomato Tour, which was extremely successful in its own right, wasn't it? I wonder if he was starting to think, maybe I can do more solo things.
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of stories floating around about that time of how things were going, and some people weren't seeing eye to eye, and there were people sectioning themselves off and songwriting, like these two would work together and then these two would work together. So it wasn't really as much a cohesive band as it was before, maybe even as early as going for the one when everything was so joyous and back together again with Rick coming back. But that, you know, the honeymoon part of that has disappeared, and it's back to the way it kind of was before, where, you know, maybe they were button heads a little bit more often. But, you know, I think that John always has a lot of ideas. We know that he has like 17 ideas every day that he comes up with, right? So I wouldn't be surprised if he had a little bit of, you know, itchy feet and wanted to try some other things. Maybe some things were offered to him, you know, and he for once decided to take them up on them.
Yeah, fascinating, isn't it? And also Steve Howe. So that's fascinating, isn't it? Because within a few months of each other, actually, Steve Howe and John Anderson released their second solo records. Steve Howe released the Steve Howe album. So there's certainly a lot of stuff going on outside the band as well as in the band around this time. And in late December 79, Martin Popoff tells us that after a frustrating commute between Paris and London, the band move everything back to Britain. John takes off to Barbados on the pretense of writing more lyrics for the album, the Yes album, that is. But Yes, break up and we'll soon reconfigure. And of course, that was drama, and that's a totally different story. Rick sets up as a tax exile in Switzerland, with the others still in Britain. They briefly consider continuing as a three-piece with Chris as lead vocalist, given the quality of the material they've been cooking up when John and Rick weren't around. So that's exactly as you were saying, that it really sort of started falling apart again. And let's just read, finally, before we talk about John, Rick Wakeman's quote here on leaving Yes again. So he says, "Alan broke his leg skating and we all went home and never reconvened. It was not a happy time. The record company wasn't happy and we as a band weren't happy. Nobody seemed to want to play on anybody else's songs at the time. And in the end, John had enough. He said he was leaving and so I joined him. I always felt, though, that my leaving was always in the best interest of the band. I cried on two of the occasions. The first time I quit and in 1979 in Paris. All water under the bridge now. The past only shapes the present. The present shapes the future, and that's what counts." So that's fascinating to read Rick's thoughts there, pretty much like your own.
I kind of believe it, especially the crying part. Probably most likely a tear in his beer at that time, as he would put it. Because he came back. He was very happy when he did return to the band, and to have it just, you know, dissipate that quickly again, I think it wasn't very it was probably very disheartening for him.
I think so, yes. And the other thing, of course, that was happening around this time was Vangelis on the scene. So John started working with Vangelis, and before their first release together as John and Vangelis, I understand that John was working with the keyboardist on various projects that appeared on different albums with him and so on before they were officially a band, as it were. And I did think, as I was preparing for this, I just had a thought, hold on a minute, are we getting this wrong? Because what we try and do with these episodes is to get the most significant next step that the band member makes when they go. And there was a John and Vangelis album, the first of that under that moniker, as I say, Short Stories, which was in January 1980. However, officially speaking, John didn't leave the band until March 1980. And then he did Song of Seven. So I think we're on safe ground, pretty much, looking at Song of Seven. But he was certainly very busy, John, as he always is, working with Vangelis. And I think, actually, if you listen to the Song of Seven, and we'll come back to this properly next time we talk about this, but being influenced by his pop electronic, the new directions for John, because there is no sense in which you could say that Song of Seven is Elias the Sun Hilo Part 2, could you?
No, you couldn't. But it's interesting that you bring that up, though, because one of the things that I remember vividly about this record is when I first discovered it, I saw the cover. And when I looked at the album cover, it had instantly reminded me of Elias. And I was like, the thought right away entered my mind, is this a continuation of Elias? And that's why I initially bought it, and much to my surprise, I was like, whoa, this is nothing like Elias of Sun Hilo. But, you know, it is interesting, though, that while a lot of it doesn't sound anything like prior Yes stuff, some of the material was actually written and demoed during Tormato sessions. So it is interesting how much they did change from that point.
Yes, it is. And I suppose you could look at Tormato and see a few hints of this sort of direction. But we'll come back to the actual music on this record next time we talk about it. But yes, I agree with you. I mean, I've got the sleeve here in front of me, and it's certainly got all those, I suppose you could call them classic John Anderson elements. There's a lot of imagery which has particular meanings. There's something that looks like a flying saucer, for example, recalling arriving UFO and all sorts of things. And actually, I was looking at the inner sleeve, which has lots of exciting imagery again on it, people sitting around an old-fashioned Bakelite radio. Maybe that's John and his family doing that. I'm not quite sure. And there's also some that we won't go into on a family show. There's also some imagery which is very natural, if you know what I mean. And it does appear to be Bambi's head with some very Walt Disney-esque birds on top of it. And there's a photograph of John and son, daughter? I don't know. You'll be able to tell me, I'm sure, listening today. But yeah, so it looks like it, but it is nothing like that Elias 2 that we still, as of 2019, haven't seen that second part of Elias that has always been rumoured. But yes, it's interesting because I'd like to listen to that John and Vangelis Short Stories album in combination with this Song of Seven, because there are certain tracks on it, I think, from what I remember, I've not listened to it for some time, which really do show perhaps a little bit more of John's influence in that John and Vangelis material than I thought there was. I mean, I'm sure I'm completely wrong, but I suppose I've always had the subconscious idea that Vangelis produced an awful lot of the music and the accompaniment and so on, and John really was down to lyrics and vocal melodies, perhaps. But I think there's a lot of the orchestration on Song of Seven which owes a lot to Vangelis, or Vangelis owes a lot to it. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's nothing wrong in thinking that, and, you know, because his resume, I guess you would say, is that of doing those kinds of lavish, you know, productions. And he was so into those kind of, you know, big epic kind of songs. So you would, of course, think that when these two would get together, that the lyrics would be John's responsibility and the music would be Vangelis's. But, you know, we've learned throughout the years how much input John actually has, or better yet, how much influence John has over the direction of the music and the shaping of it. So it would be actually very interesting to look at that side by side to see what influenced what or who influenced what.
Yeah. And I think this is also a very important album as well in terms of the origins of John's other musical interests that you can hear throughout all the different solo albums right up until the present day with A Thousand Hands Part 1. There are a lot of foreshadowing of that. And of course, some of the material on A Thousand Hands Part 1 was written around this time and later and earlier. So you can certainly see his musical fingerprints all over it. I suppose, in a way, I'm a little bit disappointed that Elias II didn't happen like this, that there was no grand concept to this album. I kind of like those, you know, being a bit of a classic Yes fan, amongst all the other mm-hmm. types of Yes. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing to say that when you leave a band, and even when you're still in the band and do a solo album, there's nothing to say, of course, that you have to produce the same kind of music as you did with the band. There's nothing wrong, is there, with John going off in different directions?
Oh, exactly. And I think a lot of the times people who leave bands and do their own solo material do it just for that reason, just to, you know, there's two reasons. People do it either because they want to write and release music that's very different than the band that they're associated with,
yeah.
or they make records that, you know, or they make a solo record to kind of prove a point where some people, which, for example, Freddie Mercury kind of comes to mind, where I've read rumors that when he released his solo record, the one that did very dismally, actually, that he wanted to make that record to prove to the world how much he has to do with Queen.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think that's a lot of the reason why people sometimes do that. I think they step out, do their own thing to kind of say, hey, look, you want to know how much I'm involved in this band? Just listen to my record.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I do love Mr. Bad Guy, it was called. Terrible, terrible name for an album, I think. But and very much of its time, it was, you know, using the techniques and the sounds of that time when it was created, I think. But that's, we're not doing the Queen Music podcast, at least not yet. One day, perhaps. but yes, that is fascinating, isn't it? And I, as I say, I love that album. And there are John Anderson albums that I love as well, which aren't anything like Yes. The one that I've got on here that I always refer to as my favourite John Anderson solo album is Change We Must. And I think that's got a huge amount going for it with the use of the string orchestra and so on. But, well, you know, Song of Seven, it's very much time we went back and had a listen to it. And what we will do is we'll return with a proper review and a proper in-depth look at the album and the music itself in probably in 2 weeks' time, because next week is our episode 400. Very exciting. So do make sure that you tune in for that one. And we're going to have a really huge competition to win some Yes things from some very, very kind friends and listeners, and also things that I've picked up along the way, as I think I mentioned last week. But in terms of Song of Seven and John Anderson leaving the band and coming up with this, then make sure you have your say initially on the show notes for this week about it. And then when we come back to talk about it in depth, tell us what you think of the music and what you thought of the album when it first came out, perhaps quite a few years after his first solo effort. All right. But for the moment, thank you very much indeed, Mark.
You're very welcome, Kevin.
Olá, sou o Miguel Falcão, de Coimbra, Portugal. Estão a ouvir o Yes Music Podcast.
Just before we go, here's the patron update, or half of it. Yes Music Podcast producers are Jeffrey Cresselius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier, and Wayne Hall. And Yes Music Podcast patrons are Mark James Lang, Martin Kelberg, Michael O'Connor, Miguel Falcao, Neil Caffrey, Paul Hales, Paul Tomei, Paul Wilson, Peter Herndon, Lobate Scarp, Rachel Hadaway, Mark Zarkol-Bags, Robert Naser, Scott Colombo, Scott Smith, Simon Barrow, Stephen Lamb, Steve Dill, Steve Perry, Steve Rode, Steve Scott, Stephen Raw, Terence Sadler, Tim Stannard, Todd Dudley, Tony Handley, Joseph Cottrell, Keith Hoisington, William Hayes, Michael Handahan, and of course, also Robert and David. So thank you very much indeed to those patrons. If you'd like to celebrate the 400th episode of the podcast and join those patrons in helping to support the show financially, as well as having access to lots of exclusive content and activities, head over to Patreon, patreon.com/yesmusicpodcast, or just click the link on yesmusicpodcast.com. So that's just about all the time we have this week. Next week, we'll be back with that fantastic 400th episode. At least I hope you'll find it fantastic. But in the meantime, please do keep up with the show via Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. So until next week, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.